All right, my topic tonight is on virtue, and I hope that we'll be able to say some things that will make an impression on you about virtue. And when you consider virtue, you think about what it's that it's something that you add to what Eric just got through with. And what was that? Say it again. Nah, come on. Say it again. That's better. Now that we got your attention, you add to your faith virtue. And when you add to your faith, that means you're going to build it up. And virtue will do that. And we're going to talk about some things that deal with virtue. What is the meaning of virtue? It's something that, you know, you don't use virtue every day, right? You just don't use that phrase a lot of times. But when you look at the meaning of it, something that you can kind of relate to, you see chastity, purity, virginity, goodness, moral excellence, and moral courage and strength. Those are some things you can kind of relate to. You can understand what those are, right? Hello? Yeah? Okay, good. You're still awake. All right. Brother Hall had to leave. He was afraid he would go to sleep. Or, you know, that wasn't the only reason. But it takes moral courage to be a faithful Christian. And we want to add something to make us a well-rounded Christian. And I want to go over some of those things this evening. But virtue is a value that every Christian must have. And that's the reason we're talking about these things. Jesus was one who had virtue. He felt it actually go out of him. And we read that in Luke, the 8th chapter, beginning in verse 43. Who remembers how that virtue went out? Anybody remember? Hello? Say again. A sick woman touched him. All right, let's look at that. Look at Luke, the 8th chapter, and verse 43. And a woman having an issue of blood for 12 years, which had spent all of her living upon physicians, and neither could be healed of any of them, came behind him and touched the border of his garment. And immediately she was healed. Or the blood, that issue that she had, stopped. And Jesus said, "Who touched me?" Everybody denied it. And then the apostles spoke up and said, "Lord, everybody's around you touching you." No. Somebody had an intent. He was talking about they had a specific purpose. And that was, he wanted to be healed. And he knew that happened because he felt the virtue that left him. Well, wait a minute. Was that chastity? Was that purity? What was it that went out of Jesus? What was one of those that we looked at? One of those meanings that might have left Jesus? Say again. Strength. Very good. That's exactly right. The strength went out of Jesus. It went out to heal this lady who had an issue of blood for many, many years. She had spent all that she had. Could not get it repaired. Couldn't get it fixed. The physicians just could not do it. Well, virtue is found in many Bible characters. And you know them as well as I do. You've studied the stories. And yet, I want us to look at just a few and then do some more studies that'll deal with this situation. In Genesis, the 39th chapter and verse 7. If you know your Bible, you know that this is talking about Joseph. And Joseph was one who had virtue. And we're going to look at that. Beginning in verse 7, it says, And it came to pass after these things that his wife, I was talking about Potiphar, cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. She wanted to have a relationship with him, an unlawful relationship. But he refused. And he said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not, or he don't know what all is with me in this house. He's left everything to me. And there's none greater in this house than I. And neither has he kept back anything from me but you in this house. But he went on to say, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He knew what it was. He knew there was no purity in that, what she was wanting to do. He had the moral courage to say no. Sometimes we need that kind of courage today. And there are other examples. Look at Daniel, the first chapter, beginning in verse 5. This is when they had been taken into captivity. Some of those of Judah were taken away. And Daniel was one of them, along with some other ones. And we'll read this here. The king appointed them daily provisions of the king's meat and wine, which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. He wanted them to be when they stood before the king. And so he was giving them certain meats and drinks and things for them to have. But that wasn't really exactly what Daniel wanted. But it was not only Daniel, but there was Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah. Or we know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But Daniel, he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meats and drinks. What kind of meats might it have been? You think about what would defile a Jew who would be in captivity. What would defile them? What kind of meats would defile them? Pork. That's right. Could have been pork. Or it could have been anything that was unclean to them. Okay? Unclean animal. And we don't know for sure what it was, but it could very well have been pork. And the wine, he didn't want to drink the wine. What might be wrong with it? Was it grape juice? Probably was alcoholic content to it. It had more than likely. Daniel didn't want it. He didn't want to have anything to do with those things that would defile himself. We look at Ruth in the third chapter in verse 7. Ruth was a mighty fine young lady. And as we look at Ruth, we see that she had come back from Moab with her mother-in-law, Naomi. She wouldn't leave her. She said, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to stay with you. Your people will be my people and your God will be my God. That's somebody from a country who served idols, from Moab. And yet she made a statement that a lot of the Israelite people were not even making at that time. They were serving idols. And yet she said, your God, Naomi, will be my God. What a great statement that would be, and she shows forth that as the time goes along. They move back to Bethlehem. She had to kind of do the work. She had to go and glean in the fields. They didn't have a field planted, so that's the only way they could make a living. Naomi was a little bit too old to do that. So she goes and gleans in the field, and she happens to be in the field of Boaz. Look at verse 7. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn or grain or sheaves, whatever translation you have. Mine says corn. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid. He turned himself over, and there was a woman laying at his feet. But that was the custom for this to happen. This wasn't something that she was doing that was unlawful. But he wanted to know, "Who are you?" And she said, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." You see, he had the option to be able to take her as a wife. If you're the near kinsman, you did those kind of things in those days. But Boaz makes a statement. Verse 10, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning. Inasmuch as thou followest not young men, and whether poor or rich, and now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest. All of the city of my people doth know thou art a virtuous woman." Virtue is not something that would just come on you. No. It didn't just come on her. She worked at it. She could, the whole town could see what kind of person she was. You know people like that. And you know people who are not virtuous as well. Virtue is associated with several women of the Bible. But in Proverbs, the 31st chapter, you see that it says, "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies." There are some things associated with a virtuous woman that's listed there in that passage, and I've kind of paraphrased some of it. But her husband trusts in her. He doesn't have to worry when he's gone to work or whatever. He knows. He's got confidence. She's going to be there. She's not going to be out doing things that she doesn't need to do. She does him good and not evil all day long. What a great thing to have. She works with her hands. You know, there's a lot of women today that all they do is lay around. I'm sorry to say that, but there are some that's like that. And you may know some. I don't know. We won't go there, but she goes out and brings food from afar for her family. And not only that, but she rises early in the day to feed them. That leaves some of you ladies out, doesn't it? Y'all don't rise real early, do you? I know of some that would like to sleep till lunchtime. Even here. Not tomorrow, though. Be here at 9 o'clock in the morning. But she rose early and she planted a vineyard. She did things to provide for her family. And she girded her loins with strength. That's not something that just happens. She buys wisely. She went out and bought a field. You know. And that can happen if you work at it. She was not afraid of the snow because she had prepared clothing for her family. She was also a good seamstress. She could make those things. You know, we've got ladies today, young ladies and older ladies. They don't know how to sew. They don't know how to make things for their family. We've kind of lost now. If you could run one of those little things with your fingers, you know, text something, you know, and make a dress, you might could do that. But you know, back in these days, they didn't even have sewing machines. They had wool, and they would sew this stuff with their hands. And even the early sewing machines, you had to set them and treadle it with your foot, you know. Look what her clothing was. It was strength and honor. That doesn't just come on you all of a sudden. You have to earn that. You have to work at it. She speaks with wisdom. You know of people just like I do. People will call and get advice from a virtuous lady. They want to know, well, what about this situation? And she can inform them of something that they could do that might help out in their family situation. And teach them things far beyond what some women could teach them. But she was not one that wastes time. She used her time wisely. And so many times today, women don't use their time wisely. But her children, as they grow up, they'll rise up and call her blessed. Not only her children, but her husband also calls her blessed. I left one out, and it's not on the chart, and that is that she helps the poor and the needy. That's a good thing. Those people who are deserving, that have less than we do, we can help them. And that's what a virtuous lady does as well. She helps those who are in need. But a lady who fears God will be praised even though she may be in dating age. She can have that virtue to show forth to whoever she's with and to her classmates or whatever it might be. You know, a lot of times you have people who will talk to young people and a lot of it, it talks to the young ladies only. That, you know, it's just important for a man to hear these things as well. Not just ladies. I want to talk to you just a little bit about a nationally known speaker, and I'm not going to give his name. I'm sure he has passed on because this happened years ago. But he would go around and speaking to high schools and other assemblies of young people, talking to them. And he would use the Bible, and of course, obviously that happened years ago because you can't use the Bible in schools anymore. You know that well as I do. But he would go and talk to them, and I want to give just a portion of talk about some of the things that he talked to these young people about. And it deals with problems that you're going to run into or already have run into in your life. And I want you to think about how, if you are a virtuous person, what kind of action would you have if this came up? Smoking. You know, a lot of times we have young people who will get involved in things, and smoking is one of them. But they seem to forget a lot of times that it can affect the most vital organs that you have. Your lungs, your heart, your brain. That's some of the most vital things you have. And other things that's associated with that that you can have problems with is emphysema, bronchitis, heart disease, heart attack, strokes. It just goes on and on. Of things that you can get from this very thing. Some other effects is one major one, and that is that the circulation in your fingers and toes decreases. And I'll tell you a little story about that. I had a really good friend, and he was using the table saw one day, and he cut his thumb off. They flew him up to St. Jude Hospital. How many of you know where that's set up in Kentucky? Some of you do. They flew him up there. They prepared him for surgery. And before the done surgery, the doctor came in and said, "Do you smoke?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Are you going to continue to smoke?" "Well, I don't know why." He says, "If you're going to continue to smoke, there's no need of taking your time and mine to put that thumb back on, because it will not live. It will die." You thought about that? The circulation would not go into that that thumb after it was reattached, because he smoked. The nicotine kills those nerve endings, and it would not happen. Some of you know this young man. He has passed on now. There are many, many, many young people your age. Age 15, a lot of times a young man or a young lady will start to smoke. Prove I'm a man or I'm a woman. Right? Did you know that 30 years later they try to quit to prove the same thing? If they're a man or a woman, they can't quit then. But they do. They try to quit, and they can't. They're hooked on it. And that's exactly what these manufacturers of these products talk about. They want you to get hooked on it. But you know, there's a spiritual side that we need to think about, not just the physical part of this. In 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, gives a really good answer to this right here. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 19. What does that say? Read that for me. Jonathan, you got it? Read that for me. Your body is the temple of God. Temple of the Holy Spirit. You know what that means? What does that mean? That means that it is within you that you have this. You're not your own person. A lot of people have the idea, "Well, I can do what I want to. It's my body." No, it's not. That's not what that scripture says. You are not your own. You have a responsibility to yourself and to God. I'm pacing on here. Another one is drinking. And this happens so many times today, especially in the college age. This is just rampant a lot of times with them. But this speaker was going to an assembly one day. And he asked the question, you know, why do young people do this? Well, they want to fit in with the other group. They want to fit in with everybody else. So I want everybody to be my friends. But he was walking into the assembly one day, going to have an assembly, and there was a young man on crutches. And he was going in same time the speaker was. But he had one leg missing. So the speaker, he was kind of curious, and so he said, "What happened to your leg, son?"
"None of your business."
"Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're right. It's none of my business." So he goes on in, and he meets the principal and tells the principal, you know, he really started the day off right. So what happened to the kid, you know? He said, "Well, that boy's kind of sensitive about that leg." Never told him what happened to it. So he went on into the assembly, and he spoke with all the group. And after the assembly, this young man on crutches came up to him, and he says, "I want to tell you about my leg, what happened to it." He said, "Oh, you don't have to." He said, "Well, I want to." He said, "I realize now you are on our side. You're trying to help." He said, "Okay." So they sat down. The young man went on to tell his story. He said a group of us decided one night we were going to kill a case of beer. That means a bunch of beer. If you don't know that, that's a case. That's a back then. That was probably 24 beers. They were going to kill a case of beer, so they got it, and he said, and we drove to the outskirts of town where the local police couldn't get a hold of them, you know. And he says we were all having a great time out there, just sipping away, and all of a sudden one of the guys said, "Hey, let's go to my house. My parents are gone." Okay. They all agreed. They throwed what was left into the car and took off back to town. On the way, they had two motorcycles, a car, and a truck. Straight stretch of town, going to town, straight stretch. And there they were, zipping down the highway. So I'm on the wrong side of the road, passing on the wrong side. He said, all of a sudden we had an accident. He said, one boy was killed. I lost my leg. You know, to fit in, that boy paid a hard price to fit in with a group of people. That's happening on a daily basis. And there's no virtue in any of that. That's what I wanted to bring out to you. There's not virtue when you do this kind of thing. I've got a lot of statistics here, and I'm going to give you a few. Did you know that within 10 minutes after you drink alcoholic beverage, that 50% of the alcohol goes into your bloodstream? And then after 30 minutes, two-thirds of it goes into your bloodstream. In 1 hour, it's all there. Why do you think they give you that little thing you blow in? You know, they can tell immediately what you've had. Because our lungs are processing all that stuff. It's telling us what you've been doing. You know, so many times people drink and they drive. A fifth of all accidents are caused by people who drink. I'm just wanting to tell you some of these things tonight so that you'll be alarmed at them. You may get 5 years in prison if you kill someone. You may get a heavy fine. You may lose your driving license. You may have a criminal record. You could have high insurance premiums or not be able to get any at all, which means you may not be able to drive. Look at Proverbs, the 20th chapter and verse 1. You know, the writer there knew exactly about strong drink. It says, wine is a mocker and strong drink is raging, and whoever is deceived thereby is wise? No, not wise. But you know what's happening? And young people don't realize a lot of times until it's too late. In Galatians, the 5th chapter and verse 19, we're given the works of the flesh. And in verse, skip on down to 21, and it says, envying, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like. Of the which I tell you before, and I have told you in times past, that they which do such things, what's going to happen to them? Hello? Y'all still awake? What's going to happen? Not inherit the kingdom. Wait a minute. That means, what's the alternative? If you don't inherit the kingdom, where are you going? Hellfire. Exactly right. And those people who associate with these things and deal with them, they just don't realize, young people, until they are caught up in it. Cursing. What part of having being a virgin? virtuous person has anything to do with this. But it's happening a lot of times with young people. You know, if you're out with a certain group of fellows or gals, did you know you can just curse right along with the best of them? It happens oftentimes. You can just curse just as good as they can, just like a sailor. But you know, when you walk in the door of the church building and turn that dial off, you ever thought about that? Or when you walk in the door of your house, you can turn that dial off. Or when you go to school in front of a teacher, you can turn that dial off. You know, if you can turn that dial off, sometimes you can turn it off all the time. You can put your life in a good relationship with God. Be a virtuous person. In Romans, the 3rd chapter, verse 13. The writer there tells us their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asp is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. It's nothing new today. You know, even in the Ten Commandments. What was one of the Ten Commandments that dealt with this? Thou shalt not what? Take the name of thy God in vain. You hear it today, probably more than we did in our entire lifetime. People, if they're happy, if they're sad, or whatever it is, you're going to hear them say, "Oh my," and they use my Father's name. Have you heard that? How many of you heard that? Now wait a minute, some of you lying. Because I know all of you heard it. It's everywhere. People everywhere say, "Oh my God." Is that not right? Yeah. And you see it. I don't care where you are. You see it on TV. You see it out in public. Everyone. They use the Father's name in vain. That's what it is. It's using it in a flippant way. There's no virtue in that. And I'm afraid it's getting over into some of our young people. It's so rampant that they use it, not thinking that that's our Father. That's our Father in heaven. And you don't use that name like that. There was a man giving a speech one time, and right in the middle of his speech, he was using the name of God and the Father and Christ. And there was a man who backed his chair away from the table, and he stood up in his chair. He said, "Sir, would you just leave Christ and the Father out of your speech, please?" You know, at the end of that speech, there were more people that come and shook his hand than there was the speaker's hand. They appreciated so much somebody standing up for God. That's what virtue is all about. Virtue in your life. To be good and pure. Have good moral character. But there's more. There's lying. And you see it just like I used to see it when I was teaching school. Students would come in and they'd have a note, a little note sign saying Johnny was sick. And you hear him talking a little bit later, "Oh man, I caught the biggest fish yesterday. Man, we went to Georgia or wherever. And yet the note said Johnny was sick." Don't know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not uncommon. But the bad part about it, a lot of times, is the parents actually sign the note. Now, sometimes students did it themselves, signed their parents' name, which is lying as well. You didn't know that. But those kind of things are happening. Lying. Lying is something that is happening with a lot of young people. And it's sad. Look at Colossians, the third chapter, in verse 8. Colossians 3, verse 8. But now you also put off all things, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds. When you became a Christian, you put off that old man. That's what that's talking about. You put away those deeds. You're not doing that this kind of thing anymore. You've made a change. Excuse me. In Proverbs, the sixth chapter, it also tells us about lying. A proud look, a lying tongue. That's some of the things that God hates. I got to move on. Drugs. This is happening right and left. Prescription drugs, young people are getting involved in them. And they're not only getting involved, they're selling them to others. I had a student just a few years ago. They took him out of school in handcuffs because he was selling drugs. It's not a pretty sight to see a teenager in handcuffs being taken away from school. But he was selling. But today, a lot of young people, they're getting them at home. Now, they're legal at home because mother and daddy's got aches and pains and they had to have some kind of medicine for that. But the kids are taking them. And they're going to their grandparents, stealing them from their grandparents. Those who are in ailing and need the relief that they give. This is happening today. And there's good people. I'm talking about good young people who get involved in this and you get hooked on it and you can't get away from it. It's almost impossible. We've had some right here that have been involved in those kind of things. And they'll tell you, better let it alone. You'll get hooked. And you can't get away from it. There's one more that's involved here. And a lot of young people are getting drawn into it. It's sad to say, but they are. And that's having sexual relations at a young age. You know, a lot of times in speeches that are given, it's given to the young lady. Young ladies, you be ladies, and the gentlemen, they'll be gentlemen. No, that's not always true. Young men have to know they got to be gentlemen too. They have to be talked to sometimes to let them know they've got a responsibility as well. This speaker that I was telling you about, he was speaking to the young men one day at an assembly. Of course, the men and young men and young ladies as well. But he directed his thoughts to the young men. He says, I want you to think about the moral purity in your life. And how you are to respect young women when you're out on a date. And he went over several other things, and finally ended his speech, and this young man came up to him when it was over, and he says, "I'd like to talk with you for a few minutes." And he said, "Okay." So he arranged to use the principal's office. But the speaker's kind of like I am about principal offices. You know, it just dates back to my childhood days. I don't really like principal's office either, you know. But this young man sat down and talked to him. He said, I'm to graduate from school in 3 weeks. I'm the valedictorian of the senior class." Well, the speaker said, "I never had that problem." But he had a problem that he had to deal with. He said, "I've got in my pocket a scholarship to a very prominent university for $150,000, 5-year scholarship in my pocket right now. But if I don't go this fall to this university, I'll lose all of it. I don't know what to do." And the speaker said, "Man, why? You know, you've got everything handed to you on a silver platter here." Well, the young man said, "I got a girl in the senior class pregnant. Nobody knows, just the two of them." And I don't know what to do. It's driving me absolutely crazy because, you know, if I'm going to get this scholarship and if I'm not going to take it, I know the principal is going to get up and he's going to make a big deal about this scholarship. And he said, "I can't have that happen because I might not go. I don't know what to do." The speaker said, "You know, young man, I don't understand you at all. I don't understand where you're coming from. What about that young lady's future? What about her life? Where is it going to be? And what about the baby? What do you mean you don't know what to do?" He said, "I don't know if I love her enough to marry her." Young man, just who do you expect to take care of your mistakes? He took his Bible out and read a passage to him over in Genesis, the 20th chapter, verse 14. "Thou shalt not commit adultery, girl." And handed the Bible to him and shoved it across the table. He said, "You read it. Read it out loud." He said, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." He said, "Oh, it doesn't say girls." He said, "No, it doesn't." He said, he got his attention. He said, "God does not condone in young men what He condemns in young women. It's not just wrong for one. It's wrong for both of them. And you have a responsibility for your actions. It's just as wrong, just as sinful for a young man to commit fornication as it is for a young woman." We look in James, the first chapter, in verse 12. It says, "Blessed is a man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love Him. Let no man say when he is tempted, 'I'm tempted of God.' For God cannot be tempted of evil, neither tempteth He any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed." It's in you. You're the one who is responsible. When you are drawn away, you're the one who's in sin. But when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin, and when sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. Human sexuality is a gift from God. He intended that to be from the beginning. He saw that man needed someone else. But He intended that to preserve human life and to strengthen the bond between the husband and wife. But we're also told in 1 Corinthians 6 chapter to flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body. But he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. Can you understand why Joseph said what he said? What did he say? What did Joseph say? How can I do this great sin? Sin against God. How can I do this? You begin to understand where he's coming from. The virtue that he had. The moral character that it took to say, no, I'm not having any part of it. You can do it today. If it ever comes to you, you can say, no, I am a Christian. And I'm not going to have. You may have to do like Joseph did. And what did he do? He ran. And you can do the same. You may have to run to save your virtue, but you can do it. To be good and honest person and follow what God has for you to do. Sex outside of marriage is sinful. But a lot of people today think, they engage in intercourse or some other form of sexual relation. Well, if we're in love, well, it's okay. You know, it's all right. Marriage is honorable, all right, among all. Bed undefiled, we're told in Hebrews the 13th chapter. But fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Virtue must be a part of man's life and a woman's. But when you think of a man, you think of things like purity, moral excellence, moral character, goodness, strength. Those things that he would be dealing with. That means you're going to do things that are right. You're not going to do things that are shady in your life. You're not going to try to get around doing things that are right. Try to find a way out. Some do that. Psalms 119, verse 9. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto according to thy word. Second Corinthians 7:1. And by the way, your folder has 1 Corinthians. I missed that. Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit. Perfecting holiness in the fear of God. A lot of times, young people will fall into temptation before they realize it and they yield to those temptations. A lack of self-control, a lot of times, is due to getting too close on a date sometimes. It may start with holding hands, hugging, and it may get on into touching inappropriately. And may end up with fornication. A virtuous person will have nothing to do with it, just like Joseph. But it's sad that some of you, either in school or have been in school, you already know of some young man or some young woman who's already lost their virginity. If I'd ask for a show of hands, I'm sure a lot would go up. You probably know of someone in your lifetime that has dealt with this kind of thing. You know the girl or girls in your class or associated with you some way that any boy can have it. Just ask. They're out there. And the guys, You know the guys who brag a lot of times about having had relations with a young lady? Yeah, they're out there too. Temptation a lot of times is encouraged by peer pressure. When you're out with a certain group, you'll have a tendency to do things that are wrong. Why do you think 1 Corinthians 15, chapter 33 says, you know, your companions, watch your companions. That's what it's talking about. Careful who you go with. Your parents, a lot of times, they worry about you. You're out with a certain group. That's why. They know the peer pressure is there. Pride. A lot of times we have our pride that we have to back up what we say. No, you don't. Lust. A lot of times will be encouraged with temptation, and a lack of self-control many times gets young people into problems. We often sing the song in the book, Yield Not to Temptation, number 442. It says, yield not to temptation, for yielding is sin. Each victory will help you. That doesn't mean a victory into sin. That means a victory avoiding sin. That's what it's talking about. Some other to win. It'll help you if you shun those kind of things. If you have a victory over temptation, you'll win another fight as well. Fight manfully onward. Work. The passions that you have, subdue them. They're God-given, but you got to subdue those things. Shun evil companions. Bad language, put it away. Disdain it. God's name, you hold it in reverence. And do not take it in vain. It's a beautiful song, some beautiful thoughts. And then it says, be thoughtful, earnest, kind-hearted, and true. How are you going to do that? Well, the chorus goes on to say, you look to Jesus. He'll carry you through. Ask the Savior to help you. Talk to your Father. When you run into problems, if you have problems with virtue in your life, talk to God about it. He'll help you. He'll help you. He's willing to aid you, and He will carry you through. Flee also youthful lust. 2 Timothy 2:22 says, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, with all those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Pure heart. And finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, there be any praise, think on these things. These are things you need to keep on your mind. Romans 8, verse 13, for if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, then you'll live. There'll be eternity waiting for you. True virtue, it's not a tame and a passive thing. It requires great energy and boldness and courage. The very essence is firmness, manliness, independence, and moral excellence. To be a well-rounded Christian, you need to add to your faith virtue. But you need to add to virtue. That's not all you need. It's just faith and virtue. You need knowledge. You need to have the knowledge of God's Word, and this will be discussed in the morning, beginning at 9 o'clock. So, make your plans to be here tomorrow morning if you can. Hope you can get a good night's sleep. I think there's one thing he needs to say. Thank you for your attention. Very much.